Hi, I'm Alex Roman, executive editor for Metro Magazine, and welcome back to Metrospectives. My guest today is Social Pinpoint's Sophia Robeson. Today, Sophia joins me to discuss what it is Social Pinpoint does, the benefits of a hybrid model of community engagement, and much more. Thank you for joining us. Hope you enjoy the conversation. Well, thanks for joining me today, Sophia. I appreciate you taking the time. How are you doing today?
Great. Yeah, I'm in Vancouver and enjoying a bit of snowy weather.
Great. So you're here with Social Pinpoint, and I think there's probably some people that aren't familiar with what Social Pinpoint does. So can you talk a little bit about what it is you do?
Yeah. So Social Pinpoint is a one-stop shop for all things public engagement. The public can come to sort of this one meeting space, and they can find anything they're looking for. It's a really great way for, if you're sort of a larger organization, to organize a lot of different engagements with the purpose of bringing back recurring engagers. Your members of the public don't have to come for a specific project. They don't need to be experts on their government in order to figure out how to engage or where to share their voice. And so it's a really great way to kind of reduce those barriers to engagement and provide accessible, friendly, fun to use tools to make the engagement process a bit easier for the engagers and for staff running it.
Okay. And I'm assuming in a lot of cases, you can actually do both, have in-person and, you know, kind of a digital engagement, a kind of hybrid model. Can you talk about the benefits of that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, during the pandemic, we went all online and really had this big sort of shift into hardcore online engagement. And now as we're emerging from the pandemic, you're seeing the swing back to in-person. And it's really important that we don't sort of lose those best practices we developed during the pandemic. There are some real gains to be seen with digital engagement. And you can really kind of magnify those gains when you try hybrid engagement. And so that's what we really push with our clients is we say, okay, you know, how do you combine your digital engagement work with your in-person work? And where are the moments actually where you can have them happening in tandem? One of the trends that we see a lot in government in particular, in sort of larger agencies, is that in-person collected comments are given a higher weight and a higher value than digitally collected comments. And so where you have a hybrid meeting, you have an opportunity to collect all of those comments in the same space. And we know that online comments are overwhelmingly younger and more diverse. And so when you're thinking about hybrid engagement for the purpose of your engagement goals, you have a real opportunity to bring in new voices and to kind of challenge some of those status quos when you lean into hybrid engagement. And so that's what we really, that's the practice that we preach.
Right. And I mean, now it's still with COVID going on. I know, you know, there was some benefits, obviously, with COVID when you couldn't have group meetings and that sort of thing. But I mean, with this model, I mean, you're still bringing inclusion, diversity that and equity that you might not have had, you know, for immunocompromised, easy for you to say, people or paratransit folks that are kind of housebound, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a sort of like best practice tenet in all public engagement. And it's the idea that you should meet people where they are. And, you know, whether that means that you're going to local senior centers and meeting in person and sort of working with those communities that want to be engaged in person, or you're providing that online space for people who can't engage in person or who just simply don't want to. There needs to be an engagement and a communication strategy for all of those communities. And especially the pandemic has given rise to sort of an acknowledgement that there are people who cannot participate in person. And that's not just the immunocompromised. It's also, you know, just people who maybe work nights and they can't make it to an in-person meeting at the sort of city hall from 5 to 7 p.m. Or from 1 to 3 p.m. oftentimes. So it's just really lowering barriers for access.
Yeah. And is there any kind of compliance issues or anything like that in setting up this program, you know, from a public transit perspective?
No.
Okay.
You know, I think that's kind of, it's a really big question. Is sort of, are we sure we can do this? And oftentimes when you actually look at the statutes around public engagement and participation and public notice and these sorts of things, there's a lot of things that we assume that we have to do that aren't actually written down anywhere. One of my favorites, just to sort of always challenge, is like we have this preconception that planning commissions have to be these very formal town hall public hearing style meetings. But oftentimes there's no actual written requirement for that. And so you look at your transit boards and, you know, sort of challenging that status quo and saying, is the public hearing actually servicing our needs? Is it overly confrontational? Are there ways that we can use, you know, best practices in public engagement and in digital public engagement, sort of challenge those status quos? The other thing from a sort of regulation standpoint is that with federal funds in particular that transit agencies are often leaning on, they will have requirements for sort of in-person engagement and public noticing and these sorts of things. And the answer should always be yes and. This is never an either or situation. And we can acknowledge some of the shortcomings of those sort of hard copy noticing of only property owners within 200 feet of a project that you're working on, right? There's a lot of issues with that premise, but that's sort of the world that you're working in when you're dealing with federal funds. And there's no problem saying yes and. And that's what we should really be challenging ourselves to do.
Yeah. And so this program, I mean, I guess I do picture board meetings as people kind of yelling or being you know, vocal about what their opinion is. Is this kind of a platform where people are still able to speak from a digital medium, or are they typing in kind of their thoughts? You know, how does that sort of part of Social Pinpoint work?
Yeah. So it's really up to the client how they want to set it up. We have seen situations where a client will set it up so that they're kind of maintaining that more formal hearing process. Maybe they have a comment box online. And so, you know, you still name your address and certify that you're a resident of this particular sort of jurisdiction. And you leave your formal comment, and then a staff person formally reads all of those to the relevant board or committee at decision-making time. That's a really sort of traditional way of doing an engagement or hearing process while still using a digital tool. We're also seeing clients who are kind of challenging that a little bit more. They're using these spaces in order to actually sort of brainstorm ideas. And oftentimes that requires taking a step back from the decision-making process and kind of having these conversations in the weeks before the final decision is made. How can you involve your boards and committees so that they're not just hearing people yelling at them? They're hearing sort of ideas as they cultivate, and they're able to really incorporate those ideas into their decision making. Where right now, public hearings are very transactional. And that doesn't necessarily lead to great trust building with the public. And oftentimes it doesn't lead to great outcomes from your public meetings either.
Yeah. And I know that Social Pinpoint has this kind of digital community engagement. Can you talk a little about how transit can utilize those tactics?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a bunch of different examples that you could lean into. One of my favorites is sort of looking at complete streets. From a transit perspective in particular, what I have seen is that oftentimes when we go to public meetings for transit projects, we kind of offer the community the world. We say, what do you want this street to look like tomorrow? And when you look at best practices in public engagement, one of the key tenets you need to keep at front of mind is building trust. And so offering people the world is not a great trust building sort of place to start, because there are around transit, you know, these are technical expert driven decisions. A bike lane needs to be X many feet wide. This road needs to be X many feet wide in order to accommodate semi trucks. You need to be able to sort of indulge the public in saying, these are the constraints and this is your realm of influence. That's just sort of best practice around public engagement in general. And so complete streets, when you're looking at specifically using a digital engagement tool, our Social Pinpoint's digital engagement tool, we not only offer great actual engagement tools, but there's also really robust content management tools. So if you look at the city of Pittsburgh, for example, they have a number of projects relative to complete streets. and they've spent a lot of time communicating complex information about the constraints in a really easy to understand way, where residents of the municipality can also kind of choose their own adventure. They can say, okay, here's a topic I want to know more about. I'm going to dive into that. This other one, I don't care about that. I'm not going to spend my limited resource time on that. And so when you combine that trust building perspective that you need in order to do interesting and progressive transit planning with good public engagement and digital tools that are also empowering transportation staff, staff should feel confident that they know how to use the input received. You're getting much better sort of transit and complete streets type decisions. So that's just kind of one very niche way that we've seen clients use this.
Yeah. And I mean, outside of transit, you know, where, what other industries are, is Social Pinpoint kind of being utilized?
Yeah, I mean, pick your flavor, I guess, right? So we see a lot of government use. That's sort of what the tool was originally designed for, is how can government make better decisions and bring the public into that decision-making process in an effective, trust-building way. The product has really grown quite a lot from that. We see a lot of use, for example, from sort of large energy agencies, utility companies. We also offer some advanced stakeholder management. So when you're dealing with thousands of formal stakeholders, of sort of people with legal standing in your process, that can get really complicated, and you can lose people and lose that hard-earned trust if you're not communicating efficiently. And so we really like to combine the digital engagement work with advanced stakeholder management. And so that's where we get a lot of utility companies in particular, and sort of large transit agencies and DOTs. Some other more niche ones, we have some tourism boards who are using the tool in order to engage residents and visitors. It's kind of like an interesting intersection. We see some nonprofits and even universities as well. Sometimes use the tool to do internal engagement. So you can actually, like, we have had some university a university in Canada, for example, use the tool internally to engage their own staff and students in decision-making about the future of the university. So there's some really cool applications, and the world is kind of your oyster. It's a bit of a blank tool that we work with you to build, and really want it to be excellent from a design perspective.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I know that you guys kind of had some experimentation during COVID, and obviously you have some success stories in transit. It's kind of our last question here. You know, can you kind of share one of those success stories, or just a little a bit about some of the successes you've had during COVID?
So one of my favorite examples is from the city of Pittsburgh, which, just disclaimer, I used to work there, right? And so these are my own stories. Before the pandemic started, we were doing, when I was working there, some sort of very large district planning, and spent a lot of time and staff resources and funding in order to, you know, rent out museum spaces to host big open houses, and bringing consultants to create poster boards, and interns to help take notes. And, you know, these are just huge capacity strains in order to run these big open houses. You have to do them at multiple times throughout the day in order to, you know, meet employee access, as well as resident access, student access. These are all things you have to think about in organizing an in-person open house.
Right.
Huge amount of resources spent on that. This particular open house, I think, reached about 150 people, and less than half of them completed the online survey, or the in-person survey, sorry. By contrast, a couple months later, the pandemic started. The city of Pittsburgh brought on Social Pinpoint as an engagement platform and hosted in the same community an online open house that was just in existence online for, I think, like 4 or 5 weeks. And it was participate on your own time as you're able. Over the course of that period, there were about 1,200 participants.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that doesn't even include the numbers for people who came to the site, interacted with the site in some way, but didn't leave a comment. And then they just said, cool, I'm good, right? Those are engagers as well. You're sort of, if you look at the International Association for Public Participation, IAP2, it's one of the sort of best practice leaders around public They have this spectrum of public engagement. The first level is inform. And so people who come and they just read and they say, cool, I'm good. That's also engagement. That's a really important cornerstone. And when you have access to these digital tools, not only can you see who actually filled out the survey, but you can see those people who came and said, cool. And that's
Right.
a important part of building your engagement and communication strategy. And so that's just a particular anecdote that I kind of love to highlight as a way to sort of contrast the sort of extent that you can reach with in-person engagement or online engagement.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, and also, I mean, the power of information is very strong. I mean, this is getting information to people that maybe wouldn't have had it otherwise.
Yeah, and it's really important that you still do that in-person meeting. You know, the people who came to the in-person meeting were not necessarily the same people who came to the online one. And so it's a matter of sort of having good data and a really good way to analyze that data on the back end of your platform, combining your in-person data with your online data in a simple and effective way so that you can make really sort of intentional decisions about your in-person meetings. Those are going to be higher resource meetings. And so you want to be really intentional about the communities you're trying to reach with your in-person meetings.
Right. And I'm sorry, I thought of one more question, and I don't know if this is relevant or not, but, you know, with this platform, you know, you probably might reach more people that are more engaged online now, you know, more people that are on their phone, more people are on their computer, and maybe, you know, for whatever reason, a shorter attention span or whatever can't process the audio information they would typically get at a meeting, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of my favorite ways that I've seen people use our tools is one of our tools, we call it the conversation tool. And I kind of sell it as a bit of a live note-taking app. And so you'll have your in-person meeting, your hybrid meeting, and your digital meeting all happen at the same time and sort of asynchronously even. And you take your notes, your staff take their notes from the in-person breakout room and the Zoom breakout room or whatever sort of digital meeting tool you're using into the exact same tool on Social Pinpoint. And all of your notes are taken in a consistent place. And so if someone doesn't feel comfortable unmuting or speaking up, raising your hand, if you have someone participating with sort of different abilities, they can participate as they're comfortable and confident. People can go in and they can say, oh, I can see this staff person. This is where they took their note about what I said. That's not actually what I meant. I would like to clarify that. And they can say that right there for everyone to see. People can like sort of comments. And so you can differentiate between comments. You can also add links. Public meetings oftentimes were like, you know, you ask a question, what is your vision? What would you like this street to look like? What do you want this neighborhood or the city to look like? And for people to be able to upload photos or links to articles that they think are really interesting, that's a really powerful tool for staff to walk away with and feel confident in their next set of decision making.
Right. Well, great, Sophia. I really appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, of course. This was wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks.